Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Please turn to your Bibles to the first chapter of the book of Daniel. In the first chapter of the book of Daniel, there's a little more going on than it might seem evident. It tells us there that in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the vessels of the house of God, and brought them to the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasury of his God. Here we see, in effect, the beginning of the loss of independence of the nation of Judah. This takes place in about the year 605, and from that particular point, Judah becomes a vassal of the kingdom of Babylon. According to that, it tells us in verse 3 that the king ordered Ashpenaz, the chief of his officials, to bring in some of the sons of Israel, including some of the royal family, men of the nobles, youths in whom there was no defect, who were good-looking, showing intelligence in every branch of wisdom, endowed with understanding and discerning knowledge, who had ability for serving in the king's court, and he ordered him to teach them the literature and language of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed for them a daily ration from the king's choice food, and from the wine which he drank, and appointed that they should be educated 3 years, at the end of which they were to enter the king's personal service. Now among them were the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and the commander of the officials assigned new names to them, and to Daniel he assigned the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. If you just looked at this, you might think these guys were given a great scholarship, a wonderful opportunity to go off and be educated in Babylon, to be able to even have some special privileges because you were associated with the king's household. However, the situation is, because Judah is a recent vassal kingdom of Babylon, they in effect have become royal hostages. So the idea behind this is you take people from the royal family, from the noble families, and if the tribute money that Jerusalem was supposed to send to the Babylonians is late, you send Brother Daniel's head back in a box. So it is a hostage situation on the face of it. However, the Babylonians didn't necessarily want it to be that bad. They could create a situation to where if all worked out well with the tribute money, then they might be able to create among the nobility and the royal family that had been educated there a party to go send back to Jerusalem, so that in the politics of Judah, you might be able to have a situation to where you had a group of young people who had been so educated with Babylon, they began to think about Babylon and to have the interests of Babylon at heart. So there were two things. One, under worse circumstances, they were royal hostages. Under the second circumstance, which was a little bit better as far as the Babylonians concerned, they could become an advanced guard for Babylonian politics there in the politics of Judah. But what we do see taking place here is they've changed them. These are young men. We don't know exactly how young they were, but we do know that the events of chapter 1 take place in 605, and the events of chapter 6 take place in the year 538. So there's 67 years between these two events in the life of Daniel. And let's suppose that Daniel is 20 years old here, and one of the young men that is involved, then that means that later on we're finding in the days of Daniel in the lion's den, we find him being 87, which may be a little bit old for a civil servant. Let's suppose these young men were 10. That would put Daniel at 77, which may be a little more reasonable. But at least I want you to understand the possibility that these young men are teens or preteens, most likely, in this situation. And they're put in an awkward situation. They're taken away from home. And if you've ever gone to camp for any length of time, I know some of you really enjoyed your camp experiences, but there are others who it's miserable because it's the first time they've ever been away from home. Here we see them taken away in a place where they're not likely to ever be able to see their family, their brothers, their sisters again, because they've been taken off into this hostage situation in Babylon. I want you to notice, in spite of the fact that they are a long ways away from home, and the fact that they are very young, we see there is a resolution that Daniel makes that's very important. In verse 8, Daniel made up his mind that he would not defile himself with the king's choice food or with the wine which he drank, and so he sought permission from the commander of the officials that he might not defile himself. Here there was a situation in which the food that the king of Babylon was providing for them may very well have not been clean animals that were legitimate under the Old Testament law. And not knowing that, it was easier for Daniel to suggest that for 10 days they be given a test of where they would only eat vegetables, and instead of the wine, they would only drink water, so that they could make sure that they weren't violating the dietary laws of the Lord. In fact, even if the animals were beef, lamb, they wouldn't be in a situation to know how these animals had been bled, and therefore didn't know whether they would be kosher as far as their eating them was concerned. So it was easier for them to just eat vegetables and make sure that they were living consistently with what the Lord would expect of them. So they offer the leader of the group to give them a test for 10 days. If you'll just give us vegetables and if you'll just give us water, then if we're worse off, if we're more haggard than everyone else at the end of those 10 days, then you can act differently. But if not, please continue to allow us to abstain from the king's choice food. So the commander of the officials agrees that he will do that. And under these circumstances, I want you to notice some conviction that's very important. Conviction means that someone adheres to their beliefs even under difficult circumstances. And I want you to understand that these young men are adhering to their beliefs under circumstances that would be very difficult. The commander of the officials is very concerned about them looking not as healthy as the rest of them, lest he lose his life. And if these young men are not eating what they're supposed to, their lives may have been in jeopardy. But yet what we see them doing is, in spite of the fact that they are young, in spite of the fact that they are far away from home, they still want to do the right thing before God. Sometimes we don't expect a great deal of conviction out of young people. Our society doesn't seem to think that young people can control their passions or control what they do. But yet, isn't it interesting that in times of war, if the draft were reinstituted for some reason, they wouldn't draft guys like me. They would draft young men, teenagers, people in their early 20s. And under those circumstances, those people make the best soldiers. They would expect them to undergo heat, to undergo cold, to undergo deprivation, to undergo difficulty, to put their lives in danger, all for the nation that they serve. But yet somehow, again, our society seems to think that young people just can't be expected to control themselves. I want you to notice, God expected Daniel and his friends to control themselves. You'll notice also they're a long ways from home. And a lot of times, conviction is difficult for people to show when they're away from home. A lot of times, people, when they're away from home, don't make provision to be able to worship with the saints. A lot of times when you find someone going away to college, you'll find someone not making provision to worship with the saints because, after all, the preacher that they knew back home won't know where they are. After all, their mama and daddy won't know where they are. After all, the elders where they are won't know where they are. So after all, they can live any way that they want to because, after all, they're so far away from home. This is a pagan way of thinking. All pagan people in the ancient world divided the world into sacred and profane time and space. They believed that every time had both sacred time and profane time. Sacred time was time that you because of certain days, were obliged to serve gods, but yet on those profane times, you did not have obligations toward them. Also, space was considered profane and sacred. There were sacred places where gods were worshiped, and there were profane places outside of which you did not have an obligation to those gods. That's the way most people in the ancient world thought. But I want you to notice Daniel and his friend realize that just because they have gotten out of the sacred space of Palestine, they haven't been removed from the jurisdiction of the God that they serve. They were recognized that just like the Old Testament teaches, all space is sacred. All time is sacred. You can't get out of God's jurisdiction. And here these people understood that. Now, it's easy for us to sit back and think, well, you know, that's a pretty primitive way for people to think, and it is. But, you know, I've known people all my life who would do things that were wrong throughout the week, but somehow withhold from doing them on Sunday, because after all, that day was sacred, but they didn't mind how they talked or what they said or what they did other days of the week. Or I've also known people who would talk about, don't talk that way in the church building, as if God can hear what's going on in the church building, but doesn't know what's going on outside of it. You see, it's a pagan way of thinking. And what is, I think, so amazing about these young men is in spite of the fact that they are young, in spite of the fact that they are far away from home, they still recognize the obligation that they have to serve God and to follow his law, even in a foreign land. Well, at the end of 10 days, it tells us in verse 15 that their appearance seemed better and they were fatter than all the youths that had been eating the king's choice food. So the overseer continued to withhold their choice food and the wine they were to drink and kept giving them vegetables. And as for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and intelligence in every branch of literature and wisdom. Daniel even understood all kinds of visions and dreams. And at the end of the days which the king had specified for presenting them, the commander of the officials presented them before Nebuchadnezzar. The king talked with them, and out of them not one was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's personal service. And as for every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king consulted them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and conjurers who were in all his realm. And Daniel continued until the first year of Cyrus the king. So here we see conviction shown by these young men, even though they were young and even though they were a long ways from home. But in both of those circumstances, because they remained faithful to the Lord, the Lord made provision for them, and the Lord rewarded their efforts. It's important for us to be able to understand that. Conviction is not just a one-way street. It means that we adhere to what our beliefs are, to do what God would expect us to do. And under those circumstances, either in this life or for certain in the next life, God will make sure and reward the efforts of those who have shown strong conviction for him. Now turn to the 6th chapter of the book of Daniel. Daniel is now an old man, as we talked about before. He has lived a life in service mostly to Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, but also to in the days of Nabonidus and his regent Belshazzar that we talked about in chapter 5. In chapter 6, there has been a regime change. The Medes and the Persians have taken over Babylon. And of all those circumstances that you wouldn't expect, Daniel, who served for a long time in the Babylonian kingdom, is now selected to be one of those who is serving in the kingdom of the Medes and the Persians. It tells us in verse 6, now it seemed good to Darius, and Darius the Mede is the local ruler there, to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, and they would be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them 3 commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them and that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit, and the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Then the commissioners and the satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs, but they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, insomuch as he was faithful and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. Then these men said, "We will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God." Here you see a situation that is extraordinary. We're going to have an election in November, and it is possible that we would have a regime change, that if Joe Biden, the Democratic candidate, winds up winning in the election, then he and the Democrats would take over. I wonder how many of the people in the Trump administration would be retained in a Joe Biden administration. I can tell you, occasionally you have a token that's left in there, but as a rule, you have a complete fruit basket turnover of officials. Here you have a violent turnover of the kingdom, and you have Daniel left from the old regime. In fact, he is so such a good reputation that we see him being thought of highly enough to be put over the whole kingdom. And that causes jealousy. And you begin to have the others conspire against him, and they begin to look into his affairs and try to see if maybe he had a boyfriend, or maybe if he had a girlfriend, or let's check out his taxes for the last 70 years. Let's see what he's been doing. See if there's a bribe that he's taken. But they finally come to the conclusion the only way they're going to find any way against him is in reference to the law of his God. And so they come up with a plan in which they will flatter King Darius with the possibility of making it so that within a 30-day period, if any person should appeal with a petition to any god or man during that time, except to Darius the Mede, that they would be taken and thrown into the lion's den. Darius is flattered. He agrees to it. And as all the laws of the Medes and the Persians were irrevocable, he winds up signing that law, and it makes it law, not considering his servant Daniel. I want you to notice, beginning in verse 10, it tells us again something that shows the conviction of Daniel here many years later. "Now when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now in his roof chamber he had windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously." I want you to notice, he knows that the document's signed. He knows that his religious practice has been outlawed for the next month, but it changes his religious practice not at all. I think it would be easy for all of us to think, well, you know, maybe the Lord would understand if I didn't pray to him for the next month. Or, you know, maybe silent prayer, that's good. You know, the Lord understands silent prayer just like he does an open display of prayer toward Jerusalem. Or you might even say, well, let's close all the shutters of the room so that no one would know, so that unless someone breaks in his room, they wouldn't be able to catch him praying. But I want you to notice, it doesn't affect Daniel's adherence to his religion at all. He continued doing just as he had done previously. His conviction shows so that even when he has everything to lose, including his life, he continues to do what he believes is the right thing to do. Well, you might expect that when the men find out about what Daniel has been doing, those who are his enemies, they report this to the king. And the king, when he hears about it, realizes that he has been had. So we see him spending all day trying to exert himself to rescue Daniel. But since the laws of the Medes and the Persians can't be altered, then he finds himself in a bind. So it says in verse 16, "Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, 'Your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you.' A stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet rings of his nobles, so that nothing would be changed in regard to Daniel. Then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. Then the king arose at dawn, break of day, and went in haste to the lion's den. And when he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions? Then Daniel spoke to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they've not harmed me, insomuch as I was found innocent before him and also toward you. O king, I have committed no crime. Then the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. The king then gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel, and they cast them, their children, their wives, into the lion's den, and they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Here again, we see the Lord rewarding conviction, even in this life. Daniel showed it throughout his life. As a young man, he showed conviction even when he was very young, and people might not have expected it of him. You see him showing conviction even when his father or mother and others couldn't see what he was doing there in Babylon, but he continued, even though he was a long ways away from home, to do the things that were right. And here, even as an old man, we see him doing what God would expect him to do, in spite of the fact that it very well could have cost him his life. But unconcerned about his life, he kept doing the things that were right. May God give us all the courage to show conviction in the things that we do and the ways that we live. If you're young, don't allow anyone to look down on your youthfulness, but in word, conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those that believe. If you're away from home, don't allow the fact that you're away from home to think that you're out of God's jurisdiction, because you don't get out of God's jurisdiction. There's that all-seeing eye watching us, and we need to understand that with God watching, we must always do the things that are right. And even if we're old, and even if it may cost us everything, then we have to do what God would have us to do. It's hard for us to imagine a situation in which our lives are on the line because we're doing what is right. But I'll tell you, more and more we live in a society that is anti-Christian, one in which we even see the government and the laws of the country making decisions that work against those people who are people of conviction and faith. And there are countries around the world in which there are people this very day who are losing their livelihood, who are losing their jobs, who are losing the places where they live, all because they are trying to serve God and do His will. Even some who are being put into prison and losing their lives because of their faith. Let's realize that we may not be out completely out of the question of that happening in our day and time. We're fortunate to live in the country we live in, but we're not always promised that it's going to be a bed of roses for us here. But we are promised that if we show the right kind of conviction, our conviction will ultimately be rewarded. Think about these things, and I hope that we can all do our best to determine that we're going to be people of conviction throughout the week as we live our weeks before God. Thank you very much for your kind attention.